Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time, we're taking a trip back to 1968.
Back to the thick of the civil rights movement.
Exactly. We're diving into a landmark Supreme Court case that has had a huge impact on all of us.
Chimel v. California.
Chimel v. California, that's right. And we're going to explore how this case really shaped the way search incident to arrest laws work, even to this day in 2025.
It's a case that really grapples with a question that's, you know, surprisingly relevant even today.
Absolutely.
Can the police search your whole house just because they've arrested you?
That's the big question, right? And what's so fascinating is that this seemingly simple question took the Supreme Court on this wild journey through all these legal precedents.
Yeah.
And it ended up having this really profound impact on how these laws work decades later.
Mm-hmm.
So to really grasp Chim, I think we need to start with just, you know, the facts of the case itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So set the stage for us.
Okay, so we have a man named Chimel arrested in his home for burglary. And here's where things get interesting. The police, without a warrant, decide to search his entire three-bedroom house.
Wow.
They went through the attic, the garage, the workshop, you name it.
For how long, though?
For an hour, they searched.
An hour.
Yeah.
I'm sure they found something then, right?
Oh, they did. They found evidence, and it was later used against Chimel in court.
Oh, wow.
So this brings up a huge issue.
Yeah.
The Fourth Amendment clearly states that searches require a warrant based on probable cause, right? But like with a lot of things in the law, there are exceptions. And search incident to arrest is one that's been debated for literally over a century.
Yeah, this idea, a search incident to arrest.
Yeah.
It's fascinating because it feels like there's so much history there.
Oh, yeah. Tons.
Like, how did this all even come about?
So it's kind of like a legal pendulum swinging back and forth, you know.
Okay.
Over the decades, each case kind of adds another layer of complexity, you know, sometimes expanding the scope of what's permissible, sometimes contracting it.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting trajectory.
Okay. Well, let's hop on this roller coaster and see where it takes us.
All right. Buckle up.
Where do we even begin with this?
Let's start with the Weeks case from 1914.
Okay.
The court in Weeks kept it really straightforward, saying a search incident to arrest could only cover the person being arrested.
Okay, so they arrest you, they can search you, but that's it.
Pretty much, yeah.
That makes sense, but I have a feeling that didn't last long.
You're right about that. Just a decade later, in 1925, the Carroll case broadened the scope to include things that were in the person's control.
In the person's control, huh? So it's not just about searching the person, but things that are within their reach. Starting to get a little more complicated.
Yeah, and then it gets even more complicated with Ed Yeo, also from 1925.
Oh, boy.
This case expanded the search area to the place where the arrest is made.
Oh, wow. So, like, if I'm arrested in my living room, suddenly the whole living room is fair game.
Yeah, it was a big shift.
Seems like a pretty big leap.
It was, and then things took an even more dramatic turn with Marin in 1927, which seemed to allow searching all parts of the premises connected to the crime.
Wait, hold on. So they could just search basically anything. Did the courts just keep, like, expanding the scope of this exception?
Well, not quite. Like I said, it's a pendulum, remember? So in the early 1930s, you have cases like Gobart and Lefkowitz, where the court kind of pumped the brakes a bit.
Okay.
Emphasizing a more limited approach.
Yeah.
You know, really focusing on things under the arrestee's immediate control.
Okay, so a little bit of reason restored, but I have a feeling this roller coaster isn't over yet.
Nope. In 1947, along came Harris, which swung us back to a broader interpretation, allowing the search of an entire apartment incident to arrest.
So back and forth we go.
Back and forth, yeah.
I'm starting to see why this whole issue is so tricky.
Oh, absolutely. And just to add another layer, Truppiano in 1948 emphasized the need for warrants whenever they were practical.
Okay, so reeling things back in a bit.
Yeah, but then
another case muddied the waters.
You got it, Rabinowitz in 1950. This one's really crucial because it's what California relied on in Chimel. Rabinowitz had a really broad interpretation of possession and control. And they used it to justify searching a whole one-room office without a warrant.
So this whole search incident to arrest exception, it's anything but straightforward.
Yeah.
It sounds like the court was really wrestling with, you know, finding that balance.
Yeah, they were trying to figure out where to draw the line.
Right, exactly. And that's the legal landscape that the Chimel court was dealing with.
Right, a real mess.
So with all this historical baggage,
yeah,
how did the Chimel majority approach this complicated issue? Like, what was Justice Stewart's take on all this?
Well, Justice Stewart really dug deep, you know. He meticulously went through the history of search incident to arrest, and his conclusion, Rabinowitz went too far.
Interesting. So what was his reasoning for kind of pulling back on this exception?
So Stewart argued that the main purpose behind search incident to arrest was twofold. One, to protect officers, and two, to prevent evidence from being destroyed.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And he said that logic only makes sense for the area within a person's immediate reach, not a whole house.
Okay, so you can search the person and the things they could grab right there,
right,
to either harm an officer or, you know, get rid of evidence, but you can't go on a room-by-room search.
Exactly.
That makes sense to me, but I imagine there were some strong opinions on the other side too, right?
Oh, absolutely. There were actually two dissenting opinions in Schimmel.
Wow.
And Justice White, joined by Justice Black, wrote a particularly strong defense of the Rabinowitz rule.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more. What was the basis of their dissent?
Well, Justice White's argument really came down to reasonableness.
Okay.
He believed that if the police have probable cause to search and the arrest creates this urgent situation, you know, where evidence might be destroyed,
right,
then a warrantless search is justified even if it goes beyond the person's immediate grasp.
So, like, if the police think you're about to flush that incriminating note down the toilet,
right,
they can search the whole bathroom even if you're, you know, handcuffed in the living room.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the idea.
That seems like a pretty slippery slope.
It's a valid concern, and Justice White definitely recognized the potential for abuse, but he was also focused on the practical side of police work.
Right.
Arrests often happen in chaotic situations, you know? Mm-hmm. A suspect might be about to run or destroy evidence.
Yeah.
And requiring a warrant in those situations, he argued, could really hinder effective law enforcement.
I can see both sides of the coin here.
Yeah. It's a tough one.
So how did the court try to balance these viewpoints?
Well, the majority in Schimmel had some strong thoughts on that. They were really concerned that allowing these super broad searches would basically gut the Fourth Amendment, you know?
That makes sense.
They saw it as like opening this dangerous door that could lead to all these fishing expeditions.
Right.
Where the police could use an arrest as an excuse to search for anything they wanted.
That's a scary thought.
It is. And that's why Schimmel really put a firm limit on what's allowed.
So they were trying to protect us from that overreach.
Yeah, they were trying to set clear boundaries.
So what are those boundaries then?
So the police can search the person they arrest, okay, and the area that's within their immediate control.
Makes sense.
But anything beyond that, they need a warrant.
Okay, so let's say you're arrested in your living room, right?
Mm-hmm.
The police can search you. They can search like the couch you're sitting on.
Right.
But they can't start rummaging through your bedroom or your desk drawers without a warrant.
Exactly. That's the main idea that Schimmel established.
It's amazing how a case from 1968 can still be so relevant to our lives today.
It really is. It shows how powerful these constitutional principles are.
But we can't forget about Justice Harlan's concurring opinion, can we?
Oh, yeah. He had some interesting thoughts.
He agreed with the outcome, right?
Yeah, he agreed with limiting the searches, but he brought up some important concerns.
Okay, what was he worried about?
He was worried about what these stricter warrant requirements would mean for the police, you know, especially at the local level.
Okay.
Like, getting a warrant takes time and resources.
Yeah.
And he was concerned about how this would all play out in different communities across the country.
It's a practical concern that often gets overlooked.
Yeah, it is. It's this ongoing tension we see even today, trying to balance security and liberty in a world that's just getting more and more complex.
Speaking of a complex world, how does all this apply to our digital lives?
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it?
So much of our personal information is on our phones and computers and in the cloud.
Right.
Does that all fall under search incident to arrest?
That is the million-dollar question that courts are still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
The digital age has thrown a real wrench into the whole thing.
It's like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Exactly.
Our legal system is trying to catch up with technology.
It is, and it's not an easy task.
So is there an answer? Like, what does Schimmel tell us about all this?
Well, it doesn't give us all the answers, but it gives us a framework for thinking about these questions.
Okay.
The core ideas of probable cause and reasonableness and the need to balance law enforcement's needs with individual privacy.
Right.
Those are all relevant in the digital age as well.
Okay. So with all these layers of complexity, what does Schimmel actually mean for, you know, the average person? Why should we care about a case from over 50 years ago?
Because it's not just about some abstract legal ideas, you know?
Right.
It's about your rights. It's about setting limits on what the government can do.
Right.
And it's about making sure the police can't just walk into your home and take your stuff without a good reason.
It's a reminder that the Constitution is a living document.
It is.
And cases like Chimmel force us to think about these basic questions about security and freedom in a world that's constantly changing.
Yeah, and Chimmel itself acknowledged that finding this balance is hard.
Right.
The majority recognized that effective law enforcement is important, but they also drew a line.
They said we can't just throw the Fourth Amendment out the window.
Exactly. So we can't just disregard the Fourth Amendment for the sake of expediency.
It sounds like they were really trying to create a system that would protect both public safety and our individual liberties.
Yeah, that was the goal.
Which is so important, especially when you think about how much data we store in our homes now.
Oh, absolutely.
Financial records, medical information, private conversations.
All of it.
The potential for abuse is huge.
It is, if these digital spaces aren't given the same protections as our physical homes.
It's wild to think about how much has changed since 1968.
I know, right?
Like, did the court back then have any idea how much technology would change the whole idea of searches and seizures?
Hard to say, but the principles they laid out in Chimmel have been surprisingly adaptable.
Yeah, they have.
Even as the world around us has changed so much.
It's pretty amazing how a case decided during the Vietnam War can still be relevant in the age of, you know, AI and constant data collection.
It is, and it just underscores how important the Fourth Amendment is.
Yeah.
It's not some outdated relic. It's a vital protection that shapes the relationship between the government and its citizens.
So as we're wrapping up this deep dive into Chimmel,
yeah,
let's leave our listeners with something to think about.
Okay.
Chimmel tried to find a balance between law enforcement needs and individual privacy rights. Did they get it right?
That's the question.
And what are the implications for our rights and for how the police operate in a world where our homes are full of data that could be used against us?
It's something we all need to think about.
This case from 1968, it's still so relevant today.
It really is.
It raises these crucial questions about the limits of authority in a free society.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Yeah, it's been a good one.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning. Yeah, it really gets you thinking.
It does.
How do we balance these freedoms with the need for security in a world that's, you know, so different from what the Chimmel Court was dealing with?
It's a question that just keeps getting more complicated as technology keeps advancing.
Right.
I mean, we're creating mountains of data every day, and it's getting harder to separate our physical lives from our digital lives.
Yeah, it feels like Chimmel really highlights that tension.
He does.
It's like trying to walk this tightrope between letting law enforcement do their job and making sure our rights are protected.
Exactly. And it's a balance we have to keep reevaluating as technology changes the whole landscape of searches and seizures.
So what are some of the big takeaways from Chimmel that we should keep in mind as we, you know, try to navigate all this?
I think one of the most important things is that our homes are given the special protection under the Fourth Amendment.
Okay.
And that includes both our physical spaces and the digital information we store on our devices.
Yeah.
The courts have been pretty consistent in saying that the government needs a really good reason to intrude into those private areas.
It's about making sure we're not subject to these random searches.
Right.
That our homes are actually our sanctuaries.
Exactly. And Chimmel also shows how important warrants are as a check on government power. It's not just some empty ritual. It's a crucial process that makes sure searches are justified and done legally.
So even though Chimmel was decided over 50 years ago, it still matters today.
It definitely does.
The principles it established,
yeah.
The need for probable cause, the idea of reasonableness, the recognition of privacy rights, those are all fundamental concepts that still guide our legal system.
Absolutely.
It's like a reminder that the Constitution isn't just some old document.
Right.
It's a living framework that changes as our society changes.
It adapts.
And cases like Chimmel show how powerful those constitutional guarantees are.
Yeah.
They protect us from tyranny and ensure that our basic freedoms are safeguarded.
It's a pretty amazing legacy.
It is. So I think we've covered a lot today.
We have.
From the history of search incident to arrest to how those principles apply in our digital world.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting journey.
It has. It shows that even cases from decades ago can have a huge impact on our lives today. So as we wrap up this episode, let's leave our listeners with a final thought.
Okay.
Chimmel v. California is a case that still sparks a lot of debate.
It does.
It forces us to ask these hard questions about how we balance security and liberty in a world that's changing so fast.
And ultimately, it's up to all of us to think about these issues and make our voices heard.
That's the great thing about living in a democracy.
It is.
We have the power to shape the future of our rights and freedoms.
And cases like Chimmel help us understand how those rights have been protected and where the challenges lie.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Chimel v. California.
It's been a pleasure.
We hope you found it informative and thought-provoking. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning.